Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Mormon News Report podcast, coming to you live from Detroit, Michigan, and also from Salt Lake City, Utah. My name is Brant. I'm the host of the Mormon News Report podcast. This is episode 63 for the week of October 22nd, 2018. Jenny is en route. She's coming, folks, so we'll just wait. But while we're waiting for Jenny, we do have a special guest. We are joined by Rosemary Card. Rosemary Card is an author. She's a former model, and she's also the host of the Q More podcast. Rosemary, welcome to the show. We are so glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very thrilled to be a part of this tonight.
So you and I were talking a little bit before we went on the air, and you've actually got a fascinating story where you're living in Utah now, but you know, like I said in your introducing you, you were a model and you've also written a book. So tell me a little bit, give me like the 3-minute version of like your crazy life, because you've had kind of a crazy life, right? I mean, not to put words in your mouth, but I think you've had a crazy life.
Well, I appreciate that. It's been a fun one for sure. Ups and downs. So I was born and mostly raised in Salt Lake City. My family lived in New York for 4 years or so. When I was 16, I signed a 3-year contract with Elite Model Management in New York. So halfway through my junior year of high school, I moved to New York City and started modeling internationally. I traveled the world for 2 years doing that. And then I wrapped up shortly after I turned 18, came back to Utah, did university and college. And then I started working for the church in their video department. We were assigned to making films of various different types for the brethren. And then a couple of years into that, I launched my company, which is called Q-Nor, just a temple dress company. And it's about to celebrate its 3rd birthday. And then Q-More, the podcast, is on like episode 3. So it's brand new. And then I have a memoir, Model Mormon, and that came out this past June. So
wow. Boy, that really does a good job of making me feel like I haven't done that much with my life. I mean, it's a victory if I can, you know, if I can go to bed at a decent hour, and here you are starting your own company, you know, working for the church and stuff like that. So let me ask you really quickly, because I'm fascinated with this time in your life when you signed a 3-year contract and you became an international model. You were only 16 years old at the time. And what was that like moving out to New York and being a member of the church in an environment like the modeling environment? I'm not going to say it's a sleazy or a bad environment. It's a very different environment though than what we've got here in the church, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it was really beneficial that I had lived in New York from 8 to 12. And so I was very like comfortable in Manhattan and very comfortable with people not understanding my faith or my background. And so that just kind of felt normal to me to be in a place where I was different from people in that sense. But honestly, like there were so many different models from all over the world and that everyone kind of felt different and everyone struggled to kind of understand each other. And so I didn't, although I was different from people, I don't feel like that was unique to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It almost feels like we're all in this unique circumstance. And so because we're all in this unique circumstance, we're all a little more tolerant and comfortable with each other, comfortable with the uncomfortable, I guess you could put it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like there were issues where people were saying like, oh, I don't work with Mormons and I was not getting jobs for that element. But then there were also girls that weren't getting booked for things because of their race or like because of their body type. So, I mean, like we all faced issues in that sense. Mine just happened to be my faith.
So you said something that we've got to talk just a few minutes about. There were people that said, I don't work with Mormons.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I remember sitting down at a casting and casting director was flipping through my book, and there you always make small talk, you know, and they were like, oh, where are you from? And I said, Utah. And he just kind of paused and he said, oh, are you a Mormon? And I was like, yeah. And he just kind of like closed my book, slid it across the table, and he said, I don't work with Mormons.
Really?
And I just thought, cool, I don't work with bigots, so I'm glad we just like we cleared that up. And so I just picked up my book and walked out.
Did you ever figure out why that, what would have been the reasoning behind that?
No, I mean,
Because
I have no idea what it was for him.
Because it really does. I mean, on the surface, it does kind of sound like it. And boy, this is going to get me into trouble. So I will probably use something that is not as inflammatory. But if you were to say something along the lines of, I don't work with Muslims.
Right.
Holy crap. Like, how, you can't. What are we doing here? You know,
do that. I mean, I think people do that all the time. And yeah. It's completely inappropriate. And I'm sure other people were experiencing that, and it was messed up. And I'm sure in his situation, he could say, like, if I were to try to like get any like lawyer involved or something or make it serious, he could say, like, oh, she just wasn't the right look for the shoot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's nothing that he could be held accountable for. And yeah.
Especially in a creative environment like that, where you've got a lot of, there's a lot of creative elements there. You can get away with something right. like that.
Oh, there's a million reasons that he could choose not to work for me.
So if people want to find out more about this time in your life, because it was a fascinating experience, you can pick up Model Mormon, Fighting for Self-Worth on the Runway and as an Independent Woman. It's available on Kindle for $5.99. Cheap. And less than the cost of a value meal at McDonald's or something like that. And it's got a 4.9 out of 5 rating with 79 reviews. So you've got a lot of people saying this is a really good book. I read it when you sent it to me probably about 6 months ago, and I was fascinated with it. There was a lot of stories in there that I was like, wow. But the other thing, and Jenny, hi, Jenny. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you on.
Hi, thanks. Hi. Hi.
So the other thing that stood out that I wanted to bring you on was I have been a listener to your podcast called Q More, and it's an interesting podcast because it's a podcast talking about issues that are pertinent to women within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but not necessarily a podcast for women. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we've tackled things that in some ways could be more close to home, hit more close to home for women. But honestly, it's geared towards men and women. I just realized that I kept thinking like, oh, I wish people would talk about this more. I wish people would talk more about that. And then I thought like, well, why don't we just start talking about it? So I was doing that a lot on my social media for my company, and a podcast just made sense. Mm. And so we have listeners who send in questions. They record voice memos on their phone. And they're about church culture or doctrine. And then I go out and find people that I consider great minds or, you know, quote unquote experts on the topic. And then we just hash it out. And I say over and over, like, we are not here to answer all the hard questions. We are here just to like float different ideas and possibilities and start conversation. So that you might feel more comfortable, like talking to a friend or a roommate or a parent or a family member about that topic and just start normalizing it. Because I think a lot of these kind of like tricky questions, things we consider tricky questions within our culture, like they don't have to be that scary. We just need to start talking about them and then it feels normal.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I know the first episode talked a lot about some of the things going on with ecclesiastical leaders and questions and interviews and things that go on in that. And you brought on Kristen Hodson and you brought on Richard Osler, two great people. And something that Kristen said really stood out to me in the sense that she was really emphasizing the fact that we need to be comfortable with putting up boundaries. And I remember you saying, wow, that's something that I'm a little uncomfortable with because of the context of an ecclesiastical interview and some of the discussions that go on there. And yeah. I think hearing that and thinking a little bit about not only what you were talking about when it came to boundaries, but also thinking about something you and I were talking about a little bit before, which was the Church Handbook of Instructions. Now, I've always said that I would love for it to be more public because I think it's important for people to know the rules that each side is playing with. And so when you establish some of those boundaries, and if, for example, that Church Handbook of Instructions, that Volume 1 was made public and accessible, or even what the church did this last summer with putting out those interview questions, it's very easy for someone to say, yeah, you know what, that's out of bounds. No, I'm not going to describe what happened in explicit detail. I'm here to tell you that this incident happened, and I'm confessing it because I'd like to start moving on and proceeding through the repentance process. And empowering people like that can be intimidating. And so I heard that episode, and my first thought was, wow, this is something that a lot of bishops need to be listening to, if anything, to hear the fact that some of their I don't want to paint all bishops with the same brush, because I don't think they're all being malicious, but some of their questions might be overstepping bounds in their earnestness to get to the bottom of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think a lot of it is just kind of passed down from one bishop to another. You know, conversations are had, like, how do you do it? Right. And there's so much that's unofficial training and saying, like, this is how I do things. And I think a lot of bishops have the best of intentions, and they're just people trying to figure stuff out. And so without, you know, a ton of training, you're bound to make some mistakes, especially early on in tenure. Or it could be like, you're so comfortable doing this that things kind of go a little too far. And so I think it's great to say, like, hey, let's all get everyone on the same level. No one's above anyone else. And let's just be really clear about what is okay, what's not okay, and what expectations we can have. And then everyone can move forward, and no one feels like they're taking a step into the dark, and no one feels like they have, you know, like, extreme power over someone else. I just think it just makes sense.
Totally, totally with you. Okay. So again, you can find her podcast, the Q More podcast, QMOR, right?
Yeah. It stands for Question More.
There you go. Q More podcast, any pod fetching app you use, take a look for that. But let's go ahead and get started with the show. So Rosemary's actually going to be joining us for the whole show, folks. So this is going to be a treat for us. We love it when we have guest hosts on. Jenny, you had told me that we have had quite a few emails, and we need to read some of them and address some of them and et cetera, right?
Please, please. I mean, I think that's only fair.
It is.
And, you know, it's good. It's a good reminder for people to chime in. Let us know you're out there. Let's talk about stuff, man.
So let's do this. I will take the first one. Jenny, if you want to take the next one. And Rosemary, do you want to take the third email?
Sure.
Okay. So the first one was from Carrie. Carrie said, K-A-R-I. Carrie, Kari, one of those two. She said, I was reading the General Conference talk, Good, Better, Best by Elder Oaks from October 2007, and saw a few interesting things to know. By the way, when I first heard that talk, I thought, oh, this is a good talk. But that's one of those talks where I have reflected on it a lot. And I think that it's one of those talks that is very quickly, at least for me personally, becoming a revisit talk, almost a yearly revisit, because there's a lot of good stuff in there. She said, an example was given as to what is good, better, and best for visiting teaching. The best example now in place, in my opinion, is ministering. Number two, Elder Oaks addresses the good, better, best ways to hold meetings. I think this may tie in with efforts to reduce the amount of meetings of all kinds. Number three, the most intriguing piece says this, but here is a caution for families. Suppose church leaders reduce the time required by church meetings and activities in order to increase the time available for families to be together. This will not achieve its intended purpose unless individual family members, especially parents, vigorously act to increase family togetherness and one-on-one time, which, being in 2007, that's pretty interesting considering what happened. So I don't
what
know.
What sorcery is this?
An 11-year prophecy in the making or something like that? I don't know. Now, Jenny, that's going to be the next thing is everyone's going to be pouring through President Nelson and Oaks and Eyring's old talks to be like, okay, is there a nugget there that we forgot? Is there something that we could find? Okay, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only nerd that would do it. Okay, Jenny, you want to take the next one?
Yeah, from Trish. I actually saw the first presidency all speaking at that session, and I'm sure she means the women's session.
Yes.
As an effort to show that it was as important a meeting as the general priesthood session. And I'm really glad that she emailed this, because when I read that, I was like, huh, I hadn't thought of it that way. For the women's sessions, it has traditionally only been one member of the first presidency speaking. That's how I interpreted this change and appreciated that sign of respect I think they were trying to show to the change. I also wanted to say that some of the talks or statements that you took most issue with were ones that directly answered or gave guidance on questions I had. When I discuss conference with friends and family, I love hearing how different the experiences and responses are. It helps me to think about a message in a different way, or even appreciate a message that didn't necessarily impress me at the time. Jenny, your impression of how women used to speak was spot on. And I'm guessing she meant primary voice.
Yes. Jenny, I don't think you understand how many people have written in and said, you nailed it. I think Ashley heard it and like clapped her hands and said, that is exactly it.
I've been listening to conferences in the 80s, and it's so hard to get past how women were speaking then to even appreciate the words they were saying. I couldn't agree more on how great it is that women aren't using primary voices when they speak in conference, but speaking with power and authority. So thanks, Trish, for that insight. There's actually an article I don't know if we're going to have time to get to today, but it discusses a lot of things that you're talking about specifically with members of the First Presidency speaking at the General Women's Session. And I have some thoughts on that too, but regardless, thank you for chiming in. I really appreciate your perspective.
Okay. Rosemary, you want to take the last one?
Yes. So this is from an anonymous listener. It says, "Hey guys, I'm listening to the latest episode in which you are discussing the Sister Social Media Fast and I always can't say this word, conjecturing about a social media fast for the men in April. If I could make a suggestion to the leadership of the church, I would ask them to invite the men to fast from video games on their game systems and on their phones. I know many men who could benefit from a fast, much the way I have benefited from a social media fast. I've seen men ignoring children, their wives, and their responsibilities because they are gaming on their phones. Just my thoughts." Ooh.
Well.
All right, so hold on.
As where it hurts.
As the male on this podcast, let me say a few things here. Let me set all of you straight, all right? First of all,
please, we'd love to hear a male voice.
Please, set us straight.
First of all, let's not get crazy here, folks.
Finally.
Let's not get right? Actually, I had someone respond to me and say, "You know, it'd be great for you men to do. It'd be really great if you guys had to go on like a football fast for an entire month." And it's like, no, listen, we don't need to get extreme about anything. I will say this. I would be intrigued to see how a lot of the young men would handle that one. Because I know
it would be interesting, right?
With all
there's
my young
a
men.
A gaming badge.
Is there really?
My son got it.
Well,
that's amazing.
I just know that in priesthood opening exercises, it is not uncommon if you're – so we have all of our young men sit kind of – and this isn't by organization. They just happen to do this. They all kind of congregate on the right pews in our chapel when we're doing priesthood opening exercises. And they're all head down and they're all playing Fortnite on their phones. And it's like, hey, guys, what's going to happen if you can't do that for a week straight? And who knows? So – okay, not that I want to start.
It's game design. Sorry, I want to make sure it's not gaming. It's game design.
Okay, game. Well,
a little different, but still, come on.
A little different, but a little the same. So, I will say this though: one of two things could happen if he were to come out and say, "Okay, man, it's your turn now," and then he were to say, "The women did 10 days. I'm having you do a month." I can guarantee the two storylines that would come out of it would be either A, thank goodness the men have to do a month, or B, what? The men are they have to do a month and we only have to do 10 days? Are we not as good as the men? Is that what's good? It's no one.
Oh, geez.
But I will say this, like, we all need to be getting ready. It's going to happen, right? There's no way that he could let us be off scot-free.
If
I mean,
yeah,
I think there's a good chance you could be.
I'll tell you, and I said this before, but that's why. I mean, I've said a few things about the social media fast, but I'm still going to give the benefit of the doubt. We've got to wait till April and see what hammer comes down during the priesthood session, because if one doesn't, oh boy,
I will.
Very interesting.
If that doesn't happen, I think I'm going to be sick that weekend. And Jenny, I'll let you do the podcast solo because I don't think I want.
That's probably a wise. Probably I don't think I want
to go anywhere near that one. Okay, so should we get into the news?
Let's do it.
Okay, Hustle and Nelson strikes again. President Nelson has launched his South American ministry tour in Peru. Again, President Nelson is 93 years old, and he's going to 5 South American countries in Bolivia, Paraguay, Uruguay, Chile, and Peru, and it's going to end with the dedication of the Concepcion Chile Temple on Sunday, October 28th. Again, 93 years old, and he's going everywhere. I would be 94. I'd be fascinated to see what his frequent flyer miles look like.
Well, and I'll just say, so when I worked at the church, I helped support a man that went and filmed these trips. And initially I thought like, oh yeah, they just like go to the country and it's impressive because long flights, it's not that bad. But their schedules are jam-packed from first thing in the morning until late at night. Every meal has a purpose. Like, it would, I mean, I feel like it would be exhausting to a 25-year-old. I don't understand how they do it.
So what I do professionally is I work with a lot of executives, and we help do a lot of the logistics and background for their international trips that they take to visit our different divisions and things like that. And it's very similar. And so if it's anything like what we do for our executives, it's very similar, where every minute of the day is accounted for. The thing is, these executives, they're done by like 8 o'clock at night. Whereas, and they usually take the weekends for their traveling, but knowing what these church leaders do, there it is all day, every day, packed to the gills, and it's meeting with different peoples, going all over the country. It's crazy. And again, he's 93, 94 years old. Like, it amazes me that he's doing this. He's joined by his wife, Wendy, Gary Stevenson, and his wife, Lisa. They spoke at devotionals for missionaries, and he followed it up with a devotional for members of the church out there. This is what the Mormon Newsroom says. As he began speaking in English, he announced to the delight and applause of the audience that he would speak in Spanish, which, by the way, is not the first time that he's done this. He's done this before, which he did for more than 15 minutes. In fluent Spanish, he spoke of the importance for keeping the commandments of the blessings of temple marriage and of the atonement of Christ as the foundation of the church, which leads back to a lot of the themes that we've been seeing, Rosemary, which is he's putting a big push on Christ in the church, which a lot of people have been saying, it's about time. Like, let's get back to some of those core fundamentals. The Deseret News... The Deseret News has a couple of more notes on that. They said he met with Peru President Martin Vizcarra for 40 minutes. And among that, he said that that both leaders agreed that the Latter-day Saints are a force for good in the country, and they also discussed the needs of women and children, humanitarian issues, and their shared concern about corruption. President Nelson expressed support for the work of Vizcarra, who has made fighting graft his top priority. A Peruvian Supreme Court justice fled the country earlier this month after police recorded phone conversations describing a criminal network of judges who traded favors with politicians and businessmen, according to Reuters. We are concerned with the problems of corruption all over the world, President Nelson said. This is where President Vizcarra is making a great effort. Really, he's loved by the people because he's anti-corruption. The two presidents also discussed humanitarian issues, and Elder Enrique R. Falabella, president of the church's South America Northwest Area Presidency, described the church's broad impact on Peru. The church has directly helped nearly 5 million people in this nation of 31 million since 1985. So, again, he's on the road. He's hustling. I'm amazed. I really am. And considering the fact that this is not his first international trip, he's done quite a few of these. It's amazing. So, okay, let's get into some weird stories here. A Utah man is behind bars after allegedly mailing ricin to the White House. And yes, there's a Mormon connection on this one. William Clyde Allen III from Logan, Utah. Which, by the way, what's going on in Logan, Utah, if we're thinking that this is cool, right? Who allegedly mailed ricin to President Donald Trump and other government leaders will remain behind bars after a judge deemed him a danger to the community on Monday. Allen allegedly sent letters to Trump, Secretary of Defense James Mattis, and U.S. Navy Admiral John Richardson containing, quote, small pieces of what appeared to be castor beans and a note with the same message, Jack and the missile bean stock powder, according to court documents. So it sounds like this guy is you know, definitely within his right mind. Yeah. During an initial court appearance last week, Allen tearfully explained that he couldn't remain in custody because he was looking forward to watching General Conference of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and needing to care for his disabled wife. So I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Cute.
Yeah, sure. Sure, Rosemary, that's one way to describe it. Like, that's really cute and cool that you're good with. Okay. Anyways, here's one near and dear to my heart, a professional wrestling legend. Don Leo Jonathan passed away last week.
Why don't you have music for this?
I almost need to like have like professional wrestling like entrance music or something like that.
Yeah.
For all the fancy production values we have, Jenny, that's the one that I'm missing is this one. Don Leo Jonathan, the 6'6", 340-pound Mormon giant, has died at age 87. Jenny and Rosemary, I'm sure you know all about the Mormon giant and his influence on the professional wrestling world. Am I right?
Oh, the one from Hurricane?
Yeah, the one from Hurricane.
Oh, the very one? Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Of course. Okay. And obviously, you knew his father, Brother Jonathan. Am I right?
Obvs. And 1977, a very good year. That's when he won the NWA tag team titles.
Jenny, this is the coolest thing. I cannot believe that you know all this stuff. It's almost like you and I planned this out a little bit beforehand. Okay, so here's the thing about him. Professional wrestling, they flub a lot of stuff, right? They exaggerate a lot of things.
What?
I feel like it's artistic.
I'm gonna give you
a little rude.
I'm gonna give you all a couple minutes to pick your jaw up off the floor. Here's another one that's gonna shock you. The matches are predetermined. They know who wins and who loses.
How dare you?
Jenny, I'm so sorry that I had to break your professional wrestling shelf at this moment. Listen, I know where I was when I found out that Andre the Giant Hulk Hogan did not literally pull every single muscle in his back when he body slammed Andre the Giant at the Pontiac Silverdome in 1984 at WrestleMania 3. I know. So I'll give you guys a minute. But here's the thing. He was billed at 6'6 and about 340, but he could have been anywhere between 285 and 340. But the thing is, he really was like this amazing high flyer for someone being as big as he was. And during this time, we started introducing a lot more steroids into professional wrestling, but he was someone who remained clean his whole life. And even if he did do steroids, he would be even more jacked than he already was. This is one that I wanted to bring up. Jonathan was legendary for his toughness as well. And even Lou Thesz said that a man who only had a minor background in actual wrestling, that Jonathan was extremely difficult to handle. The best story of them all. Jonathan once legitimately pinned a wrestling bear. Yes, they used to wrestle bears. They put a muzzle on bears, and sometimes they'd listen. Wrestling is not it is not the most glorified and the most morally upstanding industry out there, okay? But usually they give
day in their time. Dark time.
I know. Again, I'm very sorry to be bursting everyone's, you know, shattering everyone's shelf when it comes to professional wrestling. But usually they'd inject him with some sort of a tranquilizer to stuff like that. But still, you're talking about a big old bear, right? No, this bear did not have any of the tranquilizer in him. It only had a muzzle, and it was rare that someone pinned a bear, and he was one of the ones that did it. So, anyways,
a muzzle, not even a singlet.
Well, you got fur, right?
Modesty has never been the wrestling world's finest point.
I was thinking about the bear, Rosemary. Listen. I'm gonna let you guys go ahead and think about
right
that.
Right into it.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyways, Don Leo Jonathan, rest in peace, the Mormon Giant. And I'm sure everyone's going to be rushing out to see the amazing footage of Don Leo Jonathan and Andre the Giant. They had great skirmishes. Bruno Sammartino. Listen, I gotta stop with this stuff because you guys are not that interested. Okay.
Roddy Piper. We talked about this.
We did talk about Roddy Piper. Okay. Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the stories that we just can't seem to get to move on from. We're still talking about the Mormon thing. Jana Reese over at Mormon News Service did a little bit of analysis comparing the October 2018 address from Russell M. Nelson. Guys, behind the scenes here, I just got
so
done with
many Russells.
I just got done with a big family dinner of like stew and potatoes, and I'm a bit lethargic, so I'm trying to amp the energy up. And so you're going to hear a lot of this is not going to be the most polished version of the show this week. Okay. Anyways, he compared the 2018 address with the 1990 "Thus Shall My Church Be Called" address, and looking at some of the similarities and differences. And Jana had an entire huge piece, and I've been trying to trim it down and find some of the best snippets out of it. But this entire huge piece on the name of the church, and we're still going back to this one. And Rosemary, I know that you have spent some time outside of Utah, so I want to get your thoughts on this as well. Are you both surprised that we're still talking about referring to the church in the church's full name and Mormon and all those conflicts that still go on?
I mean, I guess I just feel like as far as non-members or people who aren't closely affiliated with the church, I just think whatever they want to call us, if they want to talk about us, that's great. Like,
at least you're talking about us, right?
At least you're talking about us. You know, I have a hard time imagining myself getting after someone because they said the name of the church wrong. People call my name's Rosemary. People call me Rosemary, and I like don't go at their throat for it. I just think like it's not a big deal. Like so, I know they're talking to me. It's fine.
I've got the same thing. My name is Brandt, and I've been called everything under the sun. And it's like, whatever you call me is better than what some other people have called me. So I'm good with that. But Rosemary, you said something interesting because Jana says in her piece, this correction thing that's going on, it seems to be becoming a litmus test of obedience. And Jenny, I know that's something that you and I have talked about a lot too, right? This whole concept that it's almost like I keep wanting to say Mormons talking to other Mormons, but it's almost like members talking to other members are the ones that are really pushing this change. And maybe there are a lot of people out there who have taken on the challenge from President Nelson and said, no, I'm going to correct people at work and within my community. But it really does feel like we're talking to each other with this. And it's almost like, listen, I don't know about you. I'm following the prophet and I'm referring to us as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, there is a lot of policing going on within, which is a problem. And I also, for the record, I mean, I'm doing my best. Everyone else is doing their best. But I have a problem because if you're replacing Mormons with members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, then that gets shortened to members. And that leads to exclusivity. Mm-hmm. And we are an inclusive bunch. Please bless. So that's, where I'm, but yeah, I mean, everyone also keeps forgetting that President Nelson also said, and let's civilly, I don't remember the words again, but give each other a break. This is a transition. Please be kind about it. And it was the weirdest thing the other day. I was almost I just had the thought. I'm like, oh, I mourn that. I want Mormon. I want the word. But do you want me to do those stats real quick?
Yeah. So you and I were going.
I had a friend. We were talking about this very thing, and one of my friends said, I heard that, or not even I heard. He said, President Nelson, since he's been an apostle, he's never ever used the word Mormon in a talk in general conference unless it's to the standard that he has established now as prophet.
Mm. Wow.
Meaning he has said the Book of Mormon, but as far as the whole members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, he has actually never said referred to those folks as Mormons. And so I asked my good friend Brant, who loves things like stats on words, to look that up. And here's what he found. Said President Nelson has used the word Mormon 242 times in general conference. Most of those times it was either talking about the Book of Mormon or Mormon the person or the Tabernacle Choir. The times he wasn't, one, he was quoting an old historical item that called Joseph Smith the Mormon prophet. So that was in the 1830s, and that talk was given in 2001. Another time he was talking about the Mormon Channel or quoting Mormon doctrine. Another time, all these times, he was expressing his thoughts on using or not using the word Mormon. And he did that in 1990, 1993, 2012, and now 2018. President Hinckley, in comparison, used it 260 times, but seemed to be more comfortable using it to describe the people. So there you have it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how this is framed up in historical context, because I know that there's a lot of discussions going on right now with people almost wanting to, and I have not done any level of research with this, but it feels like I don't think it's going out on a limb to say this is something that is a particularly sensitive subject for President Nelson. And the fact that he's addressed it in all these conference talks up to this point is something that it's on his mind a lot, even going back to 1990, right? I think he was in the apostleship in 84. So he was only an apostle for 6 years and he's been talking about this. Whereas President Hinckley was put in this interesting position. I think we're retconning a little bit with President Hinckley because he was a driving force behind I'm a Mormon and some of these other things that we have. But at the same time, someone
He normalized it.
He
was a PR guy.
Mm-hmm. Right. So Rosemary, someone actually pointed out to me that when he was in England on his mission, he had gotten to the point where he learned that there's some fights to fight and some fights not to fight. And I wonder if that goes back to your point about him being a PR guy and the fact of, this is not a fight you can really win that much. People are going to call you what they're going to call you. So in essence, why don't you reclaim the name and use it how you want, right?
Well, and that's what he said when he gave his talk in, I think, October conference of 1990, where he references the talk that Elder Nelson gave at that point, Elder Nelson. And he says, that was a beautiful talk. And then he shares a conversation where he says, I was talking to a friend and he said, are we ever going to be able to not go by Mormon? And the friend was like, no. And then he said, okay. Well, Joseph Smith said Mormon can mean more good. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to make it mean more good. And then he goes on to talk about how Mormon is a great person to have. If you're going to be nicknamed after someone, Mormon's a good dude. And so I think he had a very very different approach. And I think it's clear that Elder Nelson, President Nelson, felt very strongly about it, even back then. And so I would be fascinated to have a conversation with him and just say, like, how did you balance that? When you felt so strongly about something that was a little bit different than what your prophet felt, like, how did he figure that one out? I would love to know.
And the interesting thing about having this sort of history and having all this information at our fingertips now when it comes to looking through some of their old talks and being able to do some of these word analyses and some of those words, you know, when you're looking at it, it's stripped of all context, right? But the fascinating thing would be to do what you said, to sit there and – because in essence, Rosemary, what we're seeing in real time is we are seeing a – I don't know if it's going out too far on a limb, but we are seeing a difference in opinion between President Nelson and President Hinckley. And some people get uncomfortable with that because they want to think that they all think the same. And so we've got this when it comes to the name Mormon. I mean, it's very clear that President Nelson has very specific opinions on that. I wonder, though, and this might be me projecting a little bit, but I would wonder his opinions on social media, because I think that President Hinckley was someone – now, granted, when he passed away in 2008, social media really wasn't what it is today. But I wonder if President Nelson was someone who is not so keen on social media, or maybe sees it to – Jenny, you and I have had this conversation a lot about the damaging side of social media versus the positive or the uplifting side of social media. They're both there. And so
I will die on this hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if that's something that's going on, where you have some factions within the 12 or church leadership who are very high on it and see social media as a strong benefit, hence being able to have missionaries out on social media, having a strong social media presence during General Conference weekend, versus, you know what, there's a lot of damaging sides to it. So it's interesting that we're seeing this play out in real time. Really quickly from Jana, what's more, people outside the church don't associate this term, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, with Mormonism, making it virtuously useless to journalists who want to serve their readers' needs. What does serve journalists' needs is the term Mormon. For every time the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is searched on Google, Mormon is searched between 75 and 100 times. You can actually go on Google Trends and see how search terms are doing. So it's interesting to watch this play out within real time and to see specifically how news outlets are doing this. Mormon Newsroom, which has obviously come under a little bit of scrutiny and public commentary, understandably so, right? They posted a piece that said, "Why are we still called Mormon Newsroom?" Other church websites and materials will be updated in coming weeks and months. President Nelson and other church leaders understand that a change is significant, requires careful consideration, coordination, and planning. Here's the interesting words that they use. Newsroom, comma, like other church channels, comma, which tells me they're already getting used to dropping the name Mormon from Mormon Newsroom, is following the Council of Church Leadership regarding the decision and timing of changes to mormonnewsroom.org. So it's going to come. A big organization like this moves slowly, but I don't know. Are we ever going to move on from the Mormon versus Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints thing?
I mean, I think in like many years, maybe.
The age of the person you're talking to.
Yeah. I mean, it was clear, I think, when President Nelson said he doesn't super care about SEO.
Yeah.
Like that. Because when that was the first thing I thought, I was like, but the SEO, like, no, the More Good Foundation, like all the people that have put so much money and time into making this a positive thing, it's just, we're going to flush it. But I think long term, I totally see how it would be beneficial to adjust and have it be Christ's name who is, you know, we're ranking well in SEO. But I do think that's going to be a very long process.
So let's continue on. Have you guys heard of the book Educated by Tara Westover?
Yes, and I loved it.
Okay, so Rosemary, you've read it, right?
Yeah.
Jenny, have you read it or heard about it?
I don't read.
Okay, well, I will say this. Get it on Audible.
Do they have an Instagram account?
Hey, now that we're off the social, we're off the social media fast, you can do whatever you want, right? You know what I'm gonna do, Jenny? I don't do Instagram that much. I'm gonna take a picture of a page of the book every day, and I'll post it on an account, and that way you'll see.
Yeah,
I think that's illegal.
Yeah, you probably totally will not get arrested for that, or something.
If my name's not on it, they can't find me. So listen,
sure. Yeah.
I've seen Law and Order a few times. I think I know how the legal system works, okay?
Got it.
Anyways.
Yeah, no, okay, so I'll put that on my list. Educated. Tara Westover.
Tara Westover. Rosemary, my wife read it, and I'm not sure if you had the same experience, but it seemed like every two or three pages she had to stop, put the book down, say, holy crap, and then read to me what happened over the pages. Like, it is a crazy book. But the Cambridge Independent interviewed her, and she's going to be speaking at the Festival of Ideas this weekend. And her book is fascinating. And you help me. So I haven't read it. I just know what my wife went through reading it. Do you remember, like, if you had to describe the book in a couple of paragraphs, how would you describe it?
I would say she was a part of a member family, but also a extreme prepper family. And I think she does a really great job in the beginning of the book. As she says, this is not a story about Mormonism. And there are things about the book that you can tell, like, because of the background knowledge I have, I know, like, oh, she's talking about like a young women's event or something like that. But I think people reading it, it's hard for them. I could understand if someone who's not a member, the line gets blurred about like what's the extreme prepper part and what's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints part.
I like the change there.
You know, it took a breath. I had to take a breath before I said that. But I think it is a fascinating story. And there are some really sweet little nuggets where you can tell, like, here is a young women's leader who is trying to reach out and, like, accommodate for this unique family in their ward, which I'm sure that ward is probably like, what the freak is going on? Because it was insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm glad you brought that up, because so we had a family dinner tonight. My parents came into town, my family came into town, and my wife was talking to my dad about this book. My dad's a voracious reader, and he looked it up on Amazon. And he was like, "Whoa, some of the reviews of this are." Ugh. And we made the point of telling him that concept that she's not affiliating with the church anymore, but the book is not an indictment of Mormonism. As a matter of fact, not one of the things she said to the Cambridge Independent was, I think my dad was extreme in his religious beliefs because he was extreme about everything. It has been my belief for some time now that mental illness probably caused the religious extremism, not the other way around. And I'm glad she said that. But I think that some people might get a little defensive and say, wait a minute, whoa. And some of the passages that my wife was reading me without the context of the book and without going through the whole thing, you could, if you wanted to co-opt her book for your own purposes, you could sit there and say, well, see, the church did this. The church bred all these things. Yeah. But I'm glad that she is making it explicit that no, it wasn't the church doing it. It was my dad's predisposed mental state that took some of these things and then took it like 15 steps to the right to say, no, we're going to go down here, including not trusting medical care when severe injuries happen, not
or the government or even BYU.
Yeah.
Like, he thought that the church and BYU had been infiltrated by Illuminati. So it's clear that something's a little off there.
Well, and the story that my wife always brings up in the book, Rosemary, is the story about when she's able to make it to BYU. And incredibly intelligent. Like, the fact that she was raised the way that she was raised without any formal education and still gets a good enough score on her ACT to get into BYU is amazing, right? Almost a miracle. Yeah. But she's describing being in a class where they were talking about the Holocaust, and she had to raise her hand and say, what is the Holocaust? And everyone looked at her almost like, is that a really unfunny joke? And she legitimately didn't know. So, Jenny, like, yeah, you got to put this on your list. Mostly because Ashley is desperate. She's like, Brant, you need to read this book because I need to talk about it with people and nobody else has read it. You need to read this book. So read the book, Jenny, so she has someone to talk to about it.
Okie doke. It's really good. I was at BYU at the same time as her. And so I remember her being on the BYU homepage. And
oh, really?
The things that she has accomplished, it's incredible. And her story is incredible. And I think it's great. Mm.
So it's.
But do see, if you were the kind of person who any reference to the church in the media is going to get you flustered, and you're going to feel on guard, and that you need to have your fists up ready to protect the church, then Educated is going to rile you up for sure. But if you understand that, like, everyone is getting kind of poked in some way or another, regardless of your religion, then it's fine.
Can I put words in your mouth?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, maybe I'll correct you if you're wrong.
If you're the type of person who thinks that when the Salt Lake Tribune publishes anything on the church, it's anti-Mormon material, you're probably not going to like Educated. But if you're someone who appreciates the way that the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News covers the church and the different ways that they do it, you're really going to like it. Yeah. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Ish.
I mean, I think it's good for everyone. I just think, like, keep your knees bent. Everyone's going to be fine.
There you go.
It's a bad thing.
There you go. Okay. Jenny, you want to take the next two stories?
Why? I'd love to, you guys. The Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square.
Tabcats, wait.
Okay, get ready.
Okay.
They've announced who their guest is for their Christmas concert, and it's Kristen Chenoweth. Woo!
Okay, so...
No, stop it. Listen, everyone knows who she is. She's pocket-sized. She's miniature.
She's a little person.
She's won... Emmys and Tony's, I think.
I am going to be so out of place. I'm really trying hard not to like look her up on Wikipedia.
Wicked. Come on, she's Glinda. Glinda.
Oh, okay.
Wicked.
Sorry, is she the one that does Is she the one that does the popular song?
She's popular.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. There it is. There it is.
According to a press release issued Friday, Chenoweth will be featured guest and narrator for the Christmas concert scheduled for December 13th, 14th, and 15th. Complimentary tickets. Oh, just kidding. They're gone.
Are they gone already? Seriously?
Oh, for sure.
Of course they are.
Well,
yeah.
So much for the timeliness of the news, guys.
Yep. So unless you know a guy, like for reals, like follow your friends' Facebook pages if they're in the choir because they are want to do things like, hey, I've got four extra tickets like the day of. So, no, but she was on the show Pushing Daisies. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah.
It was so good. And we went to the BYU Homecoming Spectacular last year. Don't judge. There's alumni board stuff going on. But she was the guest for that. And she was incredible. It was really cool to hear her. She was just like, can I just say a minute, like how much I love this crowd and your energy. She's very Christian and just very God loving. And she's just, excellent choice. Tabcats. Well done.
So they've had a few big names come out for the Christmas concert, right? So we've had Chenoweth and who was the dude last year that came out? It was a guy, wasn't it? Oh wait, was it the Muppets last year?
Every other year it's the Candy Bomber. I don't know. Yeah.
They've had big names come out either way.
Uh-huh.
That just tells you how much.
Yep.
Was it the Muppets last year?
It was last year or the year before.
Okay.
Is Sesame Street?
I think so.
Maybe they were all part of the Jim Henson thing. Anyways, they've had big names come out. So I guess it's.
Yeah. It'll be a fun thing to look up.
I saw that. My first thought was Jenny and Rosemary, you guys better have something on this one. Cause I got nothing.
Yep, totally.
Okay, what else we got?
And then the other thing coming up is if you are in Utah, please put this on your calendar. October 27th, which is this coming Saturday, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Anthony's Antiques and Fine Art, there will be an event with MWEG, who we've talked about before, Mormon Women for Ethical Government. And the event is called Peacemaking and Politics, A Thoughtful Discussion with MWEG. So it's hosted by MWEG and by Common Consent. BCC has hosted events at this location, Anthony's Antiques, previously, and it's great. So so far, as of the recording, it says BCC Press and MWEG invite you to an evening discussing ethics, peacemaking, and politics. More details to come shortly, but add this to your calendar, a night you won't want to miss.
Jenny, are you going to be
there? The moderator will be Julia Ritchie of KUER, which is NPR, the NPR station in Utah. So,
are you going to be there, Jenny?
I've got my kids, but I am going to try to do it. Yeah.
So if anyone's out there.
It's a cool location.
It's super cool.
It's a lot of cool stuff to see. Wander through that place.
Yeah, that's the thing. You get there and it's like after hours, but there's usually a guy saying, yeah, go upstairs. And you go upstairs and wander through and you're like, look at all this art. I've got to come back here. So it's good stuff.
which and it's cool to see them. So they've done stuff like that. They've done book releases and reading parties at Written Vision in Provo. It's there's so many cool places like that in Utah, and it's really cool to see them being involved with something like that. So this the October 27th from 7 to 8:30 at Anthony's Antiques and Fine Art in Salt Lake City. Next story, really quickly, I'll just blaze through this since we've gone a long time already. This was a story from NBC 25 News out of Flint, Michigan. Just so everyone's aware, I actually work about 10 minutes from the Flint, Michigan border. So this is something that's near and dear to my heart. The church actually, I don't know exactly how you do it, but we were able to get a 1-ton shipment of clothing from the Deseret Industries. And basically they come out here and they drop it in front of a local, you know, our local church building in Flint. And we have the entire community come out. We sift through all the clothing, make sure it's in good condition. We lay it out there, and we give vouchers out to people in need and advertise it like crazy. And we have the community come out. And it's been a phenomenal – we've been doing this for about 3 or 4 years now. It's a phenomenal experience. I know, especially because I work a lot with the youth that have been out there and been a part of it and seeing these families in need. You come in, and they give you a garbage bag. And you're allowed to go through and get whatever you need. No one checks it. No one says, no, you can't be here. It's an awesome experience. And then for everything that they're not able to give to the community, we take all that and then we donate it off to the Salvation Army. So it's a really cool thing that happened this past weekend. And it's been interesting timing because they've done it on the same – they do it – we get the shipment on Wednesday, Thursday is set up and sift through the clothing. And then we open it up Friday, Saturday, Sunday – or Friday, Saturday for the community. And we have our state conference that happens Friday afternoon. So you have a lot of people who work the clothing drive in the morning and then literally change right there at the Flint building and then go to state conference. So it's cool to see that. And I love this story. And it's cool that this popped up on my news service.
That's great. Did they send water?
Yeah, Flint has a little bit of a problem with that. And guess what, folks? It's still not better in Flint. There's still some places where they're on water.
Don't forget, everyone. Flint still needs clean water.
There you go. Really quickly, this is from Peggy Fletcher Stack of the Salt Lake Tribune. With an average age of 88 and a half years old, President Nelson, Oaks, and Eyring make up the oldest first presidency in LDS history. That the average age of the first presidency increased fairly steadily after the first presidency of Joseph Smith, until its absolute peak of 88.7 years old of age under Gordon B. Hinckley, 97, and Thomas S. Monson, age 80, in the time between the death of Counselor James Faust, but before the calling of Henry B. Eyring in October of 2007. So we have an old LDS first presidency. Some people say they're out of touch. I don't think that they're that out of touch personally. I think that you have a lot of people who are up there in age, and the indictment or indication of that whole thing is, frankly, healthcare has gotten better and we're a lot better at being able to keep people alive past age 80. You know, it's not uncommon to see them going again. I keep going back to President Nelson's 93, 94 years old, and he's doing all that he's doing. So it's really cool. Very quickly, let's go through Pot Talk Radio. We talked a little bit about the difference between Proposition 2 and the medical marijuana compromise that's going on. Prop 2 is going to be on the ballot in November, and the medical marijuana compromise is something that legislative leaders, the governor, and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints all support. There are some differences between the two, and Connor Boyack of the Libertas Institute, which is a libertarian think tank in Utah, went through and examined some of the differences. So, for example, Prop 2 allows medical marijuana for, quote, other autoimmune disorders, but the compromise does not. The compromise provides for medical marijuana in hospice settings, but Prop 2 does not, which is actually an interesting nugget to see out of the two of those. Prop 2 would allow some people to grow marijuana, but the compromise says marijuana flowers can only be given in blister packs. The compromise says that the only edibles with marijuana would be cubed-shaped lozenges or gummy bears, while Prop 2 would allow medical marijuana in other food. Essentially, the biggest sticking point with that was they wanted to make sure that medical marijuana in edible form was not going to be enticing to kids, so in the form of a brownie or something like that. Prop 2.
Gummy bears don't fit that.
Listen, we've been going to Trunk or Treats for the past week, right? My kids, they understand gummy bears, and you're
okay,
right.
Okay, gummy bears are like the losers for Halloween, but
oh, Jenny.
Like them.
Easy.
Do we need to pause? Pot Talk Radio and have a discussion on Halloween candy hierarchy here, because that to me seems like a bigger issue that we need to hash out.
Listen, are you going to tell me that someone's like, would you like this Reese's? No, please. I'll take the gummy bears.
I'm going to say gummy bears.
Gummy bears are essential road trip food. However, kids don't want them for
Halloween.
I'm going to say gummy.
That doesn't make it right.
Oh no. Kids aren't. They're little. Their brains are broken.
I'm going to put it this way. You know,
got to wait till they're in their early 20s for sure.
Gummy bears are in the top 10 of Halloween candy food.
Halloween
candy.
Specifically Halloween. I'm saying, okay, I'm not talking about like every day.
No, like you go trick-or-treating, like, you knock on someone's house, and if you get gummy bears, you're not going to be disappointed. It's like the top 10 things of what you'd want.
I disagree.
Where are they? Are they outside of the top 10?
Yeah.
Oh,
gosh. Oh.
Okay, well, hold on.
I would love to go.
Where are they, Rosemary?
So I can take your sloppy seconds.
No, here's the deal. Look, hey, I'm not mad about it.
Gummy bears, I'm for sure cleaning up after.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not mad about it because if my kids don't want them, guess who gets them?
Yeah.
That's true. So, okay, I'm gonna throw this out there because we've obviously had a huge diversion. I'm going to throw this out there. Number one in the Halloween candy rankings and hierarchy, number one is Butterfingers. Rosemary, don't you fight me on this one. Number one is what would be better than Butterfingers?
Dude, Twix? I'm just a sucker for
Twix.
Twix. Brent, it's the perfect like consistency of chocolate and the caramel and the fun cookie crunch. What more could you want except a Reese's?
Okay.
A Reese's pumpkin is what? No, wait. I've gone over this and over this about like the holiday shaped Reese's. They taste different. They don't have gluten in them, actually.
Interesting.
But the regular Reese's are superior.
So I'll throw this out there. Reese's are top three Halloween candy.
Yeah.
Are we good on that? Can we, Rosemary, do I have your agreement, consensus?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to fight you on it yet.
Guys, like this is podcasting. Podcasting, you fight about ridiculous, stupid things. All right, Rosemary, I got to know. Rosemary, no. I got to know. What are your top three Halloween candies?
Anything gummy. I love anything gummy. I think the little fun, I love a good Twix, I'll say. But I do think when I get a bag full of small pieces of chocolate, I'm like a little disappointed.
So
like, there's never enough.
But they say fun size right on them.
It's supposed to be fun.
There's
so
a lot of things on this.
So do Sour Patch Kids, are Sour Patch Kids part of the gummy family?
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's definitely another. I mean, I would say that is the top. That is the top 10.
Yeah, I love gummies.
Yeah. So Canada, Jenny.
Yeah, because pop.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. Oh, Canada, there you go.
Okay.
Flying my Canadian flag.
There you go. So, anyways, yeah. So. Basically have fun. If you want to know more about Prop 2, it's only 21 pages, but the compromise is 120 pages. So some light reading for everybody.
Light reading. Good.
Yeah. So let's do really quickly, because I'm a nerd about these stats. They did the Hinckley, Salt Lake Tribune Hinckley Institute did a poll of 822 registered Utah voters with a margin of error of 3.4% on the Proposition 2 about 3 weeks before Election Day. They found that 51% strongly or somewhat strongly support Proposition 2, whereas 46% strongly or somewhat oppose the bill, and 3% don't know, which is interesting. Now we're looking at 51 to 46. Among active LDS members, 61% strongly or somewhat oppose the bill, whereas 28% strongly or somewhat support the bill, and 4% don't know. The sad thing, though, is if you're a supporter of this bill, support has waned about 15% since June, and a big erosion of support happened among active LDS members. Yep. So get ready. It's coming. I think, Jenny, I think it's going to go down to the line. I think it's going to go down to the line, and we're going to see if it passes, it's going to pass by 51% of the vote, and if it fails, it's going to fail by, if it doesn't pass, by like 51% of the vote.
And a lot of it will be the voices behind it. Did you see the – dang it, I should have sent it to you. I'll send it to you now. Maybe we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah. So it's something to keep an eye on, folks, and yeah, we'll do it really quickly. Okay, and we'll be right back after this. All right, folks. Signature Books is proud to announce the release of Salt Lake School of the Prophets, 1867 to 1883, edited by Devery S. Anderson, friend of the show, Devery Anderson. The school, with nearly 1,000 members at its peak, was a decision-making body that nominated candidates for political office, discussed theological issues, and tried to manage life in Utah after the completion of the railroad, when an influx of non-Mormons to the territory ended the isolationism that saints had known and cherished. The Minute shed valuable light on pioneer Utah and the Mormons. Signature Books has published award-winning scholarly books in the Mormon studies field since its founding in 1981. You can find School of the Prophets anywhere on Amazon, or you find books resellers like Pioneer book or Benchmark book or wherever. And we'll be right back to the main show. Look at that flawless transition. That's the kind of high quality stuff that we do here. Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left and we've got a few stories, so let's blaze through this really quickly. There's a couple of stories going back and forth on social media. I'm really not interested. One takes it a little too far and basically says that the social media phallus was a conspiracy, that it all happened right before political election season. Another one was from Savannah Hopkinson of the Deseret News, talking a lot about the social media fast and why she thinks it was a positive thing. So Rosemary, Jenny, for people who did it right after President Nelson talked about it, they're now back on social media. Have you noticed a change of social media now for the better? Because a lot of these faithful women fasted and they're back and we're not seeing the hatefulness, or is it the way that it always used to be?
I think it's the same. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I've noticed is that like my analytics for my company are a little off since I've had a major drop in engagement, which honestly, that's tough. That's really tough. It's hard to have a hit from on your business.
I heard a story with someone who had gone through something similar to that, where they ran an Etsy shop and they replenished their stock. I think I might have said this last week. They replenished their stock every Monday and they saw a 70% drop in sales because they didn't replenish their stock on a Monday because they were doing a social media fast. And there was definitely an effect there. Did you participate in the fast?
Yeah, I try to figure out the best way for me. And so that I have to get on to check my messages and see if comments from customers have come in that I need to respond to. So I try to lessen it. But I didn't do any posts for my company, and I'm definitely paying the price for it. That I haven't been posting for a week, and that is a bummer. So,
Jenny, have you seen a lot of people who are now coming back to social media after this fast and using it as an avenue to say, oh, I did it and I'm so blessed for doing it? And I mean, I don't want to diminish the experience of a lot of people, but sometimes when I see some people coming back and wanting to say things like that, it kind of makes me wonder, like, did you really do that for you, or did you do that because you wanted other people to know that you did it?
Listen, the only thing worse than women coming back from a social media fast and talking about it online, just kidding. Stop saying that, everybody.
What, that you're back from your fast?
Well, just no. Stop saying the only thing worse than
the women.
Yeah. Because I made a post about this.
Did I just step in it right there, Jenny? Is that what I did?
You did.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
No, but yours wasn't that bad, to be honest. Here's the thing. Like, do I think it's bad? No. Do I think it's bad if people did it? No. Do I think it's bad if people didn't do it? No. I've said this before, I'll say it again, I'm going to die on this hill. I take breaks when I need them because everything in moderation. Pray about it. That's what. Can this be addicting? Yes. Can it also be life-changing and you meet your husband on it? Yes. So I just don't think that there's room for chiding people for doing it the way that they did it. But if I'm also completely frank, if we're talking about it, I think it's weird. Guess what I'm not going to do next fast Sunday? Talk about how I'm fasting. So that being said, I also get that it's a trend to talk about it because you want to let your friends and family or anyone, your followers, your business associates or customers know, hey, I'm taking a break. I think that's appropriate. What was your question?
And I feel like we're always encouraging, if we're saying don't be on social media, then we're saying like, use social media for good. Talk about what you learned at church, like share church memes. And so then it's a little tricky for me when we like go at these women's throats for doing that. Like maybe they're just trying to like, I get that it gets annoying and it's like, I'm so proud of you. I actually didn't miss you. I didn't think you were MIA, like all of that. Like, I get it. But also like, she's just doing, who knows? She's just doing her best. Like, what's the big deal? Like, if it bugs you, I think it's the exact same principle that comes to, if you're trying to have a healthy interaction with social media, if something bugs you, don't follow it. Don't go thrash them elsewhere on social media. Just say, oh, I don't like that, so I'm going to unfollow. Don't keep following like with rage in your heart, like, oh, she has such a nice car and perfect clothes, so I'm going to keep following her. Like, what is that? It's so weird to me.
Yep. I could talk about this for hours. Anyway, everyone who took a social media fest, welcome back. Go see Jane and Emma.
Oh yeah. That thing. And now that I've sufficiently eaten my humble pie, I will say this. I also don't think that we should be diminishing anyone who did have a positive experience doing a social media fast. You know, like, look,
to each
their own, right? For the people who thought it was silly, fine. You do you. But for the people who had a great experience with it, great. You did that. I know for my wife, she kind of did the fasting on her own terms, and which I think is something that I've heard from a lot of people. But she actually said, you know, I've tried to spend more times to be present in the moment with our kids, and she goes, I've actually found that I'm interacting with them better more. Which, hey, if this is a good impetus for someone to reexamine some of those influences in their life, great, awesome.
Yep, I think, if it's brought them to that point where they did the very thing that, you know, that they needed to be encouraged to do, and they learned a lot from it. Cool. But I don't need to chide anybody for doing it or for not doing it. It is a personal thing, and peace.
There you go. Okay. So Jenny, we got to wrap up in about 5 minutes, right? Or do you have a little more time with us this week?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I can do a little more.
Okay, let's do a little bit more. Really quickly, because we don't have time to get into it all. For those of you who are subscribers on Patreon, if you want to see the show notes, which has all the links and all the funny comments that we usually leave to each other during the show as we're trying to produce this on the fly, you can become a Patreon subscriber, patreon.com/Mormon News Report. We don't have tiers. We're just looking to offset the cost of running this goofy little show. So a buck is all we're asking, and you can get access to the show notes and all the links and stuff like that, and other goofy stuff.
The stuff we didn't get to, like more detail.
There you go. Yep. So there's a great piece by Mehdi Harrison at Religion News Service, which is Jana Reese's, where Jana Reese has her blog. Great piece on 10 ways to imagine a new Mormonism and some of the things that we haven't been able to get into. But one of the things she talks about was the social aspect of Mormonism, the social aspect of gathering together for meals and the community and things like that. And that's something that I think I'd love to see that happen. I don't know if I want that institutionalized. I'd love to see individual bishops and ward members on a local level saying, yeah, let's on the first fast Sunday of every month or the last, every time we have a fifth Sunday, let's stick around for another hour. Let's do a potluck. I think that's awesome. And I think that's really where you have a lot of strength with the LDS Church. The last two stories that I want to get to, though, Latter-day Saints and the NAACP are collaborating on an inner city initiative. This is so awesome. Officials of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the NAACP met in Salt Lake City earlier this month to continue hashing out plans for a, quote, education and employment initiative to be started in cities from Baltimore to San Francisco. Quote, they've changed. They're singing a new song, the Reverend Amos Brown, chair of the NAACP's Interreligious Relations Committee, told fellow Black Baptist clergy in Washington, D.C. about his recent meeting in Utah. They got a new walk, a new talk, and they have admitted that there were checkered instances in the past that they were engaged in racial ideas and practices. Holy crap! I'm sorry, hold on. The holy crap was not in the original article. I want to make sure everyone knows. That was not a quote. Planners anticipate
that we know of.
I mean, who knows? Maybe that was something that the editor took out. I don't know. Planners anticipate the programs will primarily be attended by African Americans and held in Black or Latino churches, Mormon meeting houses, and recreation centers in cities including Atlanta, Chicago, and Camden, New Jersey. They did not come with any hidden agenda of proselyting, said Reverend Brown. It was made clear up front that they were concerned about what the church today needed to do of substance to address the challenges of African Americans and other marginalized people in inner city communities. And Jenny and Rosemary, I think this is awesome. This is phenomenal. This is something that makes me very, very proud of the work that the church is doing. And wow, to be a fly on the wall of Reverend Brown's meeting with LDS church officials. And it sounds like he is not shy at all about bringing some of those things up that have happened in the church's past. And to hear what they said, holy crap, wouldn't you like to hear what that was said there? And
well, think of all the members that would love to hear.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly. Like, did they say
who hear was that there? From the mouth of our church would be pretty big and important.
Yeah. Jenny, I looked to see if I did see anything, and I didn't. We might be able to gather some inference from the last time the NAACP met with the church. These conversations might have gone back to the hoax back in the spring earlier this year when they were having those conversations. But that's where I sit there and go, I wonder what reading that would mean to someone who, specifically someone who is a person of color, that's been a struggle for them to read something like that and say, wow, that's being talked about. And maybe, just maybe, it gives me some hope that we could talk about a little bit more in the future. And I don't know, maybe.
Well, I can think of also some white members that would be really good to read.
Of course.
Be like, oh,
for sure.
Maybe we weren't right on all of those.
Yep. So really quickly, we'll hit this last one, and I wish we had time to do it justice. So let's take as much time as we want. Peggy Stack wrote a very interesting piece in the Salt Lake Tribune looking at General Conference this last October, and specifically the women's involvement in General Conference. I'll just read a few pieces, and Jenny and Rosemary, I want to know your thoughts on not only what Peggy says, but also your thoughts on what happened at conferences earlier this month. The just completed General Conference promised a historic schedule shift that highlighted the emerging involvement and gender gains of Latter-day Saint women. Yet in the eyes of some, it wound up diminishing female visibility and sermon and voices. In his opening sermon, Dallin H. Oaks, Nelson's first counselor, referred to the sister presidents who spoke before him. That was encouraging to women. Blogger and web editor Emily Jensen says, seeing the term in an improved status. But presidents was changed in the online text to sister leaders, she says. The removal of the term, something the leadership just does not do unless it's an important change, shows once again that women are just considered auxiliary, even in title. So that was just one snippet out of that whole piece. Rosemary and Jenny, did you get a chance to read that piece? And did you have any thoughts on some of the – well, I mean, I guess I'll just – throw the stinky fish on the table. The fact that there were only four women who spoke at General Conference this last year and one outside of the dedicated women's session.
Yeah. So this is the hill that I will always die on. Yeah. I mean, I really love the talks that we've had from both Oaks and President Nelson that have highlighted the importance of women's voices and said things like, we need your voices and opinions. And I will say that it's tricky for me to feel like that's really believed when I feel like there's a lack of action behind that. It feels like, well, we need you to make space for us. Like, we need opportunities to share our voices. And it's tricky for me when in the most important meetings of our church, there is not an equal opportunity or even close. I really look forward to the day that we can hear from more women. I think it will benefit men and women.
Yeah. Jenny, any thoughts about that?
Yeah. So I really, really like this article. It's well organized. Peggy did a great, great job on it. A couple of things that stand out to me is that, I think Libby Boss, a blogger is the Exponent 2 maybe.
I think so. Yep.
She said the women discussed the nature of Jesus Christ, personal journeys of faith, rendering service to others, discipleship, and ways of ministering, while the three men focused on motherhood. And that is something that we've talked about before. That doesn't, even though I'm a mother, but to hear it so painted with such a broad brush makes me uncomfortable. And I'm looking for the quote. I'm scrolling, but there's a part there that somebody said, dang, I don't want to misquote it though, is the only thing. Basically it's just saying like, we keep hearing the importance of women. If the importance of women are important, you know, like actually is there, I'm someone who has always been uncomfortable with the fact that the closing speaker at the women's session has always been a man. And I think that, and I get it. It's a member of the first presidency, often the prophet. I think if you're gonna, we need to give more credence to the Relief Society president, the young woman general president, the primary president, those women's voices. Kind of put your money where your mouth is, sort of. I don't want to be disrespectful. And I do look forward though to hearing,
to hearing those women presidents speak at the priesthood session in April.
So
it, me too, because there is precedence for that. There is precedence for that. So
it's interesting. I was going back and forth with someone on Twitter, and we were looking at some of this stuff. And I actually looked at the last 10 years of General Conference to look at the speaker representation. And from what I was able to find over the last 10 years, usually prior to this year, from 2008 to 2017, there's about 10 women speakers. So that includes both the women's session and the and I guess this is probably not the
general proper, sessions.
The general sessions. Okay, I'll put it that way. So 10 speakers. This year, there were 7 speakers. Now, a big factor with that was the fact that you're looking at a dedicated women's session prior to that, where usually, my understanding was, it was the entire president, the president of the primary and the president of the Young Women's or the Relief Society or their counselors that would take up most of those speaking slots. And then it would be a member of the first presidency that would come in and give the closing remark. And so because of that, you only saw 7 speakers at the 20. And I'm looking at it from the entire year. So April and October, right? Not just one of those years.
Okay. Like, where are you getting these numbers?
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have probably made that clear. I'm adding April and October together.
So a year.
A year. Okay. Yeah. So you're looking at between 4 and 5 speakers per semi-annual session, I guess, if that makes sense. And then that's when we had the situation in this last October where there was only a few speakers because that was unprecedented in the fact that the entire first presidency spoke there. So like one of, I think it was Trish who emailed in that, I mean, there are some ways that it's a benefit to sit there and say, wow, the entire first presidency is speaking. That gives the women's session some weight, gives it some, and I know that we could probably have a discussion about, well, wait a minute, why do we have to have the men come in? And either way, but I think it's interesting to put all that together to say, yeah, it does play a factor. So.
Well, and there are 4 entire other sessions that women could speak in. Yep. You know, I just think like, yeah. So if we're going to have the first presidency speak in women's session to give it more weight, rad. I love that. Then we have 4 other entire sessions to hear from other women leaders. And that would actually be more beneficial because that means men would have the opportunity to learn from women too, because
and understand that they're important voices to hear.
Yeah. Can you imagine what that would mean in the ward and the home level if that was exemplified?
No. Let's not get crazy here.
I
will say this. I mean, if you think it's bad now, I have a feeling, depending on what happens in April, it could get even worse. And so I've heard from a few people close to the situation that a lot of these speakers are identified months and months and months in advance. It wouldn't surprise me if we're looking at maybe even 6 months in advance that they've already got the speakers for April identified. But now that we're not going to have a women's session in April, it's going to be the priesthood session in April. Boy, it could get bad. It could get really bad.
Well, I just say, I hope we follow the counsel of our prophet and we make our voices heard.
There you go.
Yes.
Okay. Jenny, any final thoughts on this one before we get into sunshine in your soul?
I found it, and it's just the church's male officials don't realize that if they really want to hear women's voices, because they say that they do and that they're important, the Relief Society president needs to have the same kind of gravitas and presence they have.
There you go. So, okay.
Something to think about.
All right. Let's wrap it up here. Really quick. One last story that I wanted to bring up. It's not really a story, but it's a series of posts going on at the Exponent. There is a series of posts called Hear LDS Women, and it is LDS women talking about their experience sometimes with male leaders and sometimes some of the difficulties that happen when their voices are not heard, including things like a female seminary teacher being shut down by a bishop because, despite the fact that she was teaching directly from the manual and some of the new stuff that we've got in the manuals, like the revelations and context and things like that, he didn't like it. And so he shot her down. Anyways, check it out at the Exponent. But let's go into sunshine in your soul really quickly. For me, aside from a big football victory over a certain university in the state of Michigan and watching Ohio State lose, I got to say this. So Jenny and I have been going through trying to get our new site up and going, trying to get everything up and going.
And by both of us, he means him. He does all the work.
I'm being nice, Jenny. I'm being very nice. And
I say, that's prettier. And he's like, yeah, that's what Ashley said. I'm like, yeah, obviously. Like, she's the brains behind this organization.
Listen, you're the MVP. Ashley's the brains. I'm just the mouthpiece that just blah, blah, blah. I will say this. There is a great This has nothing to do with Mormonism at all, but there's a great website out there called Canva, C-A-N-V-A. If you are not graphically inclined, Canva is easy and it's simple. You can get it as an app on your phone. You can design some simple things. It's been really nice for me. So that is the sunshine in my soul, knowing that I don't have to go, you know, groveling to my wife saying, hey, Ashley, can you make me this? Hey, can you do that? I can be a big boy and I can do things on my own. So anyways, Rosemary, do you have any sunshine in your soul, things that are on your mind, things that you're passionate about, things that are making you happy, anything like that this week?
Yes. So the thing that makes me the happiest this week is, and this is not a shameless, of course, it's a shameless plug for Q More, but our last episode was on Heavenly Mother. And for all of the subscribers of the podcast, the notification that came up on their phone said, Heavenly Mother is now available. And I freaking love that.
That was cool. So, that was really cool to see.
The awesome. Most true notification to ever go up, Heavenly Mother is now available. That is the sunshine in my soul.
And speaking of Heavenly Mother, you and Rachel Hunt Steenblick were at a reading for her book, Mother's Milk, right?
Yes. We did a couple of joint events. I love Mother's Milk with a passion that burns like a thousand suns. And so we've done some events where she reads some of her poems and I read some excerpts from Model Mormon. And it's been really great. Rachel's fantastic.
And sad that she had to move off to China. But
yeah,
she's there now.
Yeah. Rachel's awesome. Okay, cool. And Rosemary, thank you very much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. Again, Qmore, Q-M-O-R. Just put it in any pod fetching app, right?
Q-M-O-R-E.
M-O-R-E. There you go. See, yeah. I don't spell very well either. Okay, Jenny, what is your sunshine in your soul this week?
Real quick, sorry, I've got a list. The first one is voice texting, emailing. Did you know that's a thing? I did. You know how I found out? Because my kid emailed on her P-Day, and it was a voice text.
Oh, so you were able to hear her voice?
Yes, she sounds like a grown-up.
Oh.
It was awesome. It was just really cool that's what she did. She just like recorded it and then emailed it.
Hold on. Not to be all old man here, but you kids these days, do you know my parents, I had to record into an old school cassette tape for people to hear my voice. And now, I had to send it in a boat across the ocean. And now you kids these days with your voice emailing.
Don't I know it? I love that we're my kids.
You
live
can
in the future.
Chat with her on her P-Day and.
Yep.
Anyway, all right, go on.
Secondly, my 17-year-old had a seizure on Tuesday, and it was hopefully one and done. Like, we don't know what caused it, but the outpouring of support has been massive, and so thank you, everyone. She went to the ER and was really well taken care of. She can't drive. She can't swim. She's on the swim team. So she's been restricted from a few things till she gets clearance and we get the results from her EEG sleep study thing next week. But thank you everyone for being awesome.
So I gotta tell you this, and it's mostly because my daughter is very cute. So my 4-year-old really likes, she's very big on praying right now. And she heard Ashley and I talking about your daughter and her seizure. And Ashley was asking me, so do they know what happened? I said, no, not that I've heard. And it really bothered my 4-year-old. And so that night we usually go through the same, you know, we read stories and then we sing songs and then we say a prayer together. And she said, and please bless mommy and daddy's friend that her daughter gets better. So she was in my little 4-year-old's prayers.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. I will tell Emma. Thank you so much. That is so sweet. And please thank her for us.
I will.
The other thing is my son today, you know, typically they attend their dad's ward more than they attend mine. But last, as I mentioned last Sunday, my son was ordained a deacon in the, as he calls it, the Aaronic priesthood. And my bishop came over yesterday and invited him to pass the sacrament today for his first time in our ward.
Really? Hold on. So the bishop went to his house and said, I would like you to pass the sacrament today.
Like, you know, cause my kids are with me cause it's fall break.
Yep.
It's my turn to have them for fall break. And the bishop came over and was like, hey, Quinner, you want to pass the sacrament tomorrow? Like you just turned 12, you're just ordained. And just like the cool, like young men, like in our ward, it's not a big enough group to separate into classes. And so it was like all of them together. And he just, I mean, he went and the young men were like champions and like giving him knuckles and totally just like all right, yeah, all you got to do, you know how to do it. You've watched us, you know how to, you've watched Sacrament your whole life. You know, you do this section. And they were just so, I could tell he wasn't necessarily nervous, more kind of like on guard, like looking for a cue from anyone, you know, as far as what to do next. And they were great.
Hey, as a young man's leader, that is, you couldn't ask for anything better.
Yeah,
that's exactly what you want.
It's fantastic. And then the last thing is Twitter, for two reasons. One, blocking. I've been blocking so many trolls. I'm just like, oh, that's adorable. Block. And secondly,
hold on, I gotta ask. And again, this is now becoming like brand infringing. So how many of those have been like people going at you and I, and I'm trying to engage with
many,
and you were just like, I'm done. No, I'm done with you. Block.
Yep.
I'll let Brant deal with it.
Well, I'm just,
nobody got time for them.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, are we okay? No, we're not. Bye now. Yeah. Yep. For sure. And then also because get ready. 3 years ago today, I tweeted out, I was at a concert. It was a Wednesday. Oh, it wasn't a Sunday. You know the story, but I was at a concert and I connected Twitter to Instagram and I tweeted a thing. And the very next morning, John Dye replied to that tweet. And now he is my husband.
Gosh.
Maybe I need to tweet out something connected to Instagram tonight.
I'm a big like fan of like dates and anniversaries and stuff. And what happened was I tweeted it and actually by common consent replied to it. And John had tickets to the concert, but he didn't go because he was young men present and had to go to that activity that night and replied to by common consent's reply and to me.
And the concert was?
Churches.
There you go. How convenient. Okay, folks, thank you so much for sticking around. Rosemary, thank you for coming on with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
So again, if you're interested in her book, you can find it on Amazon. It's only $5.99 if you're someone who's into Kindle. The book's title is Model Mormon: Fighting for Self-Worth on the Runway and as an Independent Mormon Woman. And if you want to hear more of Rosemary, we were talking before the show, Rosemary. Your podcast deals with a lot of issues pertaining to women, but you actually want men to listen, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's very like women and men. I think these issues apply to everyone.
It's great. I've been a subscriber and I've been listening. It's Qmore, Qmore. If you want to hear more from Jenny, where can we find you?
My handle is at formerly Fred, FormerlyPhread, as in bread. Twitter, Instagram, also Facebook.
There you go. And Rosemary, if people want to follow you on any of the social media platforms, where can they find you?
Instagram is at Qnor, Noor, _TempleDress, and at Rosie Card. And then on Twitter, at Rosemary Card.
There you go. And if you want more of the show, you can find us at The Mormon News on Twitter. I don't do Instagram because I don't do pictures. And you can find us on Facebook, The Mormon News. Or if you want, you become a Patreon member, patreon.com/Mormon News Report. You get the show notes. You get any other deep cuts that I decide to do during the week or anything like that. So, folks, thank you so much for listening. Rosemary and Jenny, thank you so much for coming on. And we will talk to you again after a while.